Welcome to the Solid Verbal.
The Solid Verbal.
Come after me! I'm a man! I'm 40!
I've heard so many players say, well, I want to be happy. You want to be happy for a day? Eat a steak.
It's that woo-woo!
And now, Dan and Ty.
Welcome back to the Solid Verbal, boys and girls. My name is Ty Hildenbrandt. His name is Dan Rubenstein. Don't forget, you can follow us on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. You can subscribe to the show. We do two shows a week now at iTunes.com/solidverbal. We are also on Google Play, also on Spotify. You can find us literally everywhere. Fine podcasts are sold. Dan Rubenstein, how are you?
Ty, I feel good. Going into week two, I'm reaching, and I think you are too, for something in the distance, and it's so close that at least you can almost taste it. And at this point, Ty, just release your inhibitions.
Yeah, okay.
Feel the rain on your skin,
this
Ty.
This is Natasha Bedingfield.
It is Natasha Bedingfield.
This is an oldie but a goodie, Dan. I want to say, like, oh, this is going back to college now, isn't it?
It may be right after college. It's 05, 06 in that area. It was the theme song to The Hills.
Feel the rain on your skin. It's rainy out there today. Is that why you're going Natasha Bedingfield theme?
Not intentionally, Ty, but do you know what the rest is? It's still unwritten.
Yeah.
Yeah. That's all I have.
I have a story to tell you today. And
okay.
I don't know if I should tell Mama H.
Okay.
I had to run up there very quickly before I came back to the home studio. And I saw a vehicle, not right out front, but close enough to Mama H's house. It was a big white SUV labeled paranormal inspection vehicle.
What the hell? Really?
I swear to God, it was like a Mazda CX-5, but equipped. It had paranormal inspection vehicle on the side. And then all sorts of other things, like kind of to let you know that it wasn't just labeled in a weird, funny way, like West Coast choppers, you know?
Mm-hmm,
It says infrared equipped. It had a bunch of like really technical sounding things on it, to the degree that I'm actually thinking someone in the area believes they may have a paranormal instance that they need to get inspected.
What could that be? What is an actual understandable paranormal? We can get into this later if you'd like, because we have to both look backwards and forwards.
Right.
College football things. But something paranormal that is also sort of within the sort of realm of acceptable.
What happens where you decide that is your last resort to call a real life Ghostbuster?
Yeah, maybe there's a weird gravity thing. I know there's an area in Oregon that has a very strange, like, I forget what it's called, but there is like this very strange gravitational field situation. So maybe that's what it is.
I never thought that my hometown had any kind of Bermuda Triangle quality to it, but I'm willing to reassess. Here we are. Okay.
Anomaly.
Yes. Here we are. We have some news. Breaking news. No beep boops.
Boop, 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 beep, boop, boop. I'm ready. What do we have? I was
games.
So excited for the breaking news.
We have three games that we need to discuss. We didn't discuss them because we recorded the show. They do it every year now on Labor Day.
Yeah.
They throw this like weird college football schedule at us. It's not college football Saturday or even just college football Thursday or Friday.
Right.
They have to extend it out now into Sunday and Monday. Lucky for us as college football fans, it just so happens that those were like the three best games of the weekend. But as it relates to the podcast, it makes life a little bit more difficult because we like to stay on our normal Sunday, Wednesday schedule. So
right.
So here we are.
Well, also, if we record a show Tuesday recapping the week and then we record a preview for the next week Wednesday, that's, I don't know. We need time.
Not enough time for digestion.
Yeah.
So where do you want to start? Because we had a miraculous comeback by UCLA. We had what secretly may have been the very best game of the weekend in Virginia Tech over West Virginia.
Yeah.
And then we had Tennessee getting whooped by Georgia Tech, but coming back and winning in overtime when Georgia
Couple
Tech
overtimes,
missed it.
Yeah,
double overtime when Georgia Tech missed on a two-point conversion.
Let's start with Sunday. We can start with Virginia Tech, West Virginia. UCLA was the better finish. That was a more dramatic and some bigger names because of Kevin Sumlin's job security, because of Josh Rosen's. Everybody's got strong opinions about. That was a hell of a game that I did not see happening after the first half that Texas A&M had. Not at all.
UCLA at one point in the third quarter trailed, I believe, 44-10. So they were down 34.
Right.
And Nick Starkle gets hurt, breaks his ankle out for the year. So bummer for him. But that kind of swung momentum a bit in favor of UCLA. Mm-hmm. And Josh Rosen just went off, Dan. He went off.
Kevin Sumlin would be very bad at the NCAA football series. He would be, he is, and we all know the player that instead of just rolling with what works, is always looking to just stretch the seam, is always looking to run the speed option, is always looking to do things, not in a cute way, but to always try to get a little bit of flash to his game instead of just taking the 6 yards, Ty. And it was, it had to have been a bummer to watch if you're an Aggie fan. And I think the story is probably more how much UCLA stayed with it, even getting down as much as they did, and yep, how defeated the defense looked at times with Travion Williams just slicing and dicing and holding the drum major's baton, the mace, on the sideline, where it just seemed all Texas A&M. But, and credit to Twitter, I don't remember who I saw. It might have been Stu Mandel or somebody like that. I had gone and started making dinner or something. I was like, hey, just so you know, it's 44-31. It's getting a little interesting. I was like, okay. It was just sort of on in the background, and went back to it. And my goodness, Josh Rosen, the inevitability at the end of the game of just like 8 yards, 13 yards to the tight end, Caleb Wilson, to whomever, was, you just felt the wave come and tie, and there was nothing you could do. And an unbelievable performance from Josh Rosen and the UCLA receivers, especially after what seemed like such a beating early on. So cool to see as a college football entertainment fan. Not so cool if you're an Aggie, and yet another disappointment after promise, all encapsulated in a single game for Texas A&M. Which, again, and you know this, and I will let you speak, I promise. Why did they stop running the ball?
I don't know why they stopped running the ball. What I was going to say is the game-winning touchdown was on a fake spike.
Yes.
And much was made about the fake spike because you don't see it that often. And of course, it led to the game-winning touchdown. I wish more people would be talking about the fact that the clock at that point was already stopped.
Yeah, it was, which made it even better almost.
It was a good throw. The receiver beat the defender. That's why they scored the touchdown. Mm-hmm. But I don't think I'm going out on a limb when I say that no one was really fooled by the fake spike.
I wasn't fooled, but I got real excited as soon as I saw what was happening.
Speaking of old NCAA plays, so UCLA wins the game, a dramatic comeback, 45-44. Congratulations to them. Big game for Josh Rosen. Virginia Tech was the other game that was going on Sunday evening, and this was a good back-and-forth battle. Both teams, I thought, showed a lot of reason for promise. I came away from it thinking, okay, maybe West Virginia won't go 5-7 this year because Billy Greer looked good in spots. But Josh Jackson ultimately was the quarterback of note in this one. 235 passing, 101 rushing, 2 touchdowns in total. Justin Fuente seemed to get him going in the second half, and he was really able to take charge. They end up winning the game 31-24. They played it at FedEx Field.
Yeah, I was told by Todd McShay it was Fuentes. So, Fuentes. it's an unbelievable performance, all things considered, that it's his first game in an NFL stadium, albeit a terrible NFL stadium, but an NFL stadium nonetheless, going against a pretty decent, a ranked team in West Virginia. And I don't know, there must be something about Justin Fuente in a quarterback whispering kind of way. Because last year with Gerard Evans coming out and pretty quickly establishing himself as one of the better ACC quarterbacks this year. And that was a new system last year. This year with Josh Jackson, his early results, it's incredibly impressive, and a great stand at the end from Virginia Tech's defense, which we figured would be a strength. Still, just a terrific performance, and clarifies at least some of the quarterback questions within the ACC as a whole.
And then there was the game on Labor Day.
Mm-hmm.
Which is also a bit wild and crazy. It seemed for a good chunk of this game, for most of this game,
yeah,
Tennessee was going to get mollywopped by Georgia Tech.
Work.
They couldn't stop anything.
This their defensive line was, and I tweeted out the crockbotting picture, and I stand by it because, man, the Tennessee defensive line just was cooked to mush, Ty.
Yeah.
It was, they were tenderized.
Yeah.
Good for Tennessee, because Quentin Dormady did not look all that good in the first quarter particularly, and slowly got better over the course of the game. I really liked watching John Kelly. I think he is somebody who's going to be very good for them this season. It sucks to hear about it. It's Juwan Jennings, right? Who is now out for the year for Tennessee. That always hurts. Georgia Tech, what are you doing? What are you doing? 600 and some odd total yards in a losing effort? Do you have the sound?
I do have the sound. We should play it here. Yeah.
Our pal, I think it was David Ubben, tweeted us wondering, has a team rushed for 500 plus yards like Georgia Tech did and lost? And I looked it up. Five teams have since 2000, all option teams. It was like Army, Navy, Georgia Tech, Rice, and somebody else. I don't remember. But, oh, maybe New Mexico under Bob Davey. So, whoo, you can't do that. You just can't. 500 plus rushing in a losing effort? No, Georgia Tech, no. The turnovers, the Ted Roof, no.
It was good to see, though, that Tennessee kept fighting, because moments early in the year last year, that was the rub against Butch Jones and Tennessee, that they were out there sleepwalking. And we didn't see that here. They fought.
Yeah, no, you're totally right. I wanted to see, I was like, in watching this year's Tennessee team, I will take it as an optimistic sign. If I can see at least one person on the sideline holding a trash can, I will know Tennessee is in a good place. And then I did, Ty, and we're here, and it's great.
Defending life champions win 42-41 in double overtime when they get a stop on a two-point conversion.
Yeah, stoned them.
That rounds out your action for week one. Some other notable information for all y'all. DeAndre Francois.
Oh.
Yeah, we discussed DeAndre Francois and his injury on our last show. He is now officially out for the season with a torn patellar tendon. That means that James Blackman, he's a true freshman, a three-star, 6'5", 185, a tall drink of water, is now going to be your starter for Florida State. Obviously, if he's playing at Florida State, he must be pretty good. The problem is that he is not DeAndre Francois. And oh, by the way, Florida State was, I think, a national championship, at a minimum, a conference championship contender entering the 2017 season. I don't know how much of that changes, but the math is definitely a little bit different now that Francois is on the shelf.
How many points does Florida State need to consistently score for you to feel good about them winning 10 games this year with Blackman? With what looks like a top-tier, excellent, excellent, nasty defense.
Yeah, I mean...
And Cam Akers and, all sorts.
24?
24 points a game?
24?
Yeah, they can do that.
I think they can do that.
I think they can get around 30 still. I genuinely believe Jimbo is, in his own right, the way we discussed Justin Fuente, a really nice quarterback whisperer, if nothing else. Got Christian Ponder drafted in the first round.
That's right.
EJ Manuel drafted up high. I think they can score 28 to 30 a game. Now, this is obviously contingent on James Blackman, but I think they can regroup to the point where they are threatening double-digit wins. I don't think it changes the dynamic against teams like Clemson and whoever they could, Miami, but I don't know how many other teams. So we'll see. I don't have Florida State's schedule in front of me, but I'm excited to see this quick turnaround process and what it looks like, maybe not this week or in the next couple of weeks, but in October.
And then the other quarterback injury news is that Jacob Eason will be out for the Notre Dame game when Georgia travels up to South Bend this week, and he's got a knee sprain. He won't be out for the year, but he is going to miss some time. He's going to be replaced by a four-star true freshman, Jake Fromm. We saw him a little bit after Eason went down in the first quarter this past weekend against App State. I thought he actually looked pretty good. He may have been better than Jacob Eason in the way he came in there and balanced the offense.
Did either one of us draft? The backup might even be better than the starter.
I don't think we drafted that, but that was definitely an option. And you know what? What's funny about that is I was talking to the Solid Wife about what took place in week one. Of course, the Solid Wife, noted college football enthusiast.
Naturally.
And I mentioned to her, just kind of in passing without even thinking about it that, yeah, Notre Dame's going to be going up against a true freshman. He might even be better than the starter.
Ah.
And I caught myself like, whoa.
Ah.
He could be. He could be. He seemed to bring a level of balance to this offense. I know he pushed Eason in spring for that starting job. Eason wanted out, but now mm-hmm. Fromm's going to get a chance to get in there and, you know, big start, night game on the road at Notre Dame here to show what he's made of.
Yeah, showed some nice poise against a what should be a pretty good App State defense. And Ty, if he is indeed better than Jacob Eason, so Jacob to Jake.
Yeah.
Can we officially say?
Oh boy, I'm excited. And I know where you're going with this.
If he is indeed better, if he is the better Jake, and it will, I mean, this is a great test on the road against Notre Dame.
Yeah.
Can we call him, and this is contingent on him being better, can we call him Jake Superior?
I think we'd have to.
We have to.
Jake Superior making waves, right?
Jake Superior.
Making a splash.
That's how you, oh, see, there it is. That's how you establish a nickname, Ty.
A rising tide to lift all boats, yeah.
Yes, it's a matter of wanting it.
Rapid fire here.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll find out. We're going to preview that game and a bunch of others. We mm-hmm. should probably do that before people fall asleep. We've got picks.
Damn. Time. Help. I need picks of the week.
Before we get into the picks, I hope everyone took the advice last week.
Advice about your window?
Was my advice about the window of opportunity right or was it right?
It was absolutely right. It was correct. You're good at this, Ty.
I'm very good. I'm better at this than actually picking winners and losers.
It's much more important.
Absolutely. This week has a much, much better slate of games. Very top heavy, very night heavy,
mm-hmm.
which we can discuss here in a little bit. But a lot of high profile matchups, not a ton of the tweener games to worry about. I say go out, enjoy the day, go on the bike ride, go on the long run in the morning. Get back by like 4.
Yes.
4 o'clock. Get back by 4. Get on the couch.
Eastern
time. Thank you. Pop open a drink, relax, and figure out how the hell you're going to watch 4 games at the same time.
So that would be Penn State Pitt, Arkansas TCU, Oregon Nebraska. Is there a 4th game in that window? That 3:30, 4 o'clock, 4:30
window? Not really. I'm thinking here that if you get back by 4, you catch most of Penn State Pitt, most of TCU Arkansas. Because let's be honest, mm-hmm. TCU Arkansas is going to be a game that comes down to the fourth quarter. Ease into the college football weekend and then get ready for the quadruple header at night.
That sounds right. I have a recommendation for the window, Ty, and I want to see if we can make this work for at least one person.
Yeah.
You just said go out and hang out with your friends and family, right? Just sort of enjoy your social life. I'm going to say in this window, and we can time this so we can know if it works, Ty, I'm going to say in this window, try and make a baby.
Aggressive.
Bring out the miracle of life because 9 months from, we're recording this on Wednesday, September 6th, we can say, if this does happen for somebody, we can say, oh, wow, solid verbal baby.
Because
sometimes people say, oh, it's a Super Bowl baby because, you know, the Patriots won and like they were born 9 months later. We get it. That's fine. But nobody else, there's no big event today.
Right.
We can take all of the credit for what's 9 months from today, like May 6th.
Yeah.
We can solid verbal babies everywhere being born May 6th.
It's like when babies were made during Superstorm Sandy.
It's exactly right.
Yeah.
There is no Superstorm right today, I don't believe, anywhere. At least, I mean, Irma's coming and everybody take precautions and I hope everybody stays safe. It's ridiculous. But I think we're okay. I think we're in the clear as all babies born on May 6th. Is it April 6th?
I didn't know there'd be math on this show.
Right.
I'll give
9 months from September 6th. Yeah.
But
we're taking all the credit in the window.
We've had people get married already who listen to the verbal.
We both listen. That's true.
But to give the gift of life now to the verballers, I think that'd be something special.
So I'm not going to go into any explicit discussion with this, but I'm going to say if you're in a position where you are considering it anyway, you have the blessing of Ty and myself.
Absolutely. Okay.
Okay.
So, with all that being said,
mm-hmm.
your window of opportunity is before 4 o'clock Eastern. Get back in.
Solid for babies!
That's right. Okay. 3:30 on ABC at Penn State. It is another installment in a long rivalry between the Penn State Nittany Lions and the Pittsburgh Panthers. I've seen this line everywhere between 20 and a half, actually 19 and a half, and 22. It's jumping around. There seems to be a fair amount of steam on Penn State, Dan. This is the preeminent rivalry in Pennsylvania. Quick history lesson for you.
Lehigh Lafayette, Ty.
No. Among major college football, this is the preeminent rivalry.
I stand by my comment.
Did you know these teams had played 96 times before this game went dormant after the year 2000? And then they did the normal peacocking ritual where they blame each other because of scheduling conflicts, or you joined a conference. No, you joined a... They played last year at Pitt for the first time in 16 years. Pitt won, and it was good for them because after James Franklin came in and shot off his mouth about dominating the state and all that,
sure,
it gave Pitt a nice little feather in their cap, and they went on to beat Clemson a little later on in the year. And that loss probably kept Penn State out of the playoff. Now it's time for revenge, Dan.
Okay.
Games at State College. Pitt's kind of in a rebuilding mode. Penn State's a top five team. They're out for blood. I think James Franklin wants to go out there and win and run it up.
So Pitt went to overtime against Youngstown State, a very good FCS team.
How much do you read into that?
I don't think a team is great for killing an FCS team. I have questions about a team if they struggle with an FCS team.
The thing is, though, they didn't fully struggle. They were up 21-0 at half, and then they sort of mailed it in.
Yeah, that's what really good teams do, and that's that's what teams that are good enough to beat Penn State do, the Big Ten last year. Here's the problem as well. They gave up. They were letting anything happen on defense. And I'm a little bit worried about that, because if Pitt can't stop anything, Penn State's offense is anything. Yeah, they can do whatever they want against average teams. So that worries me. I think you're right about James Franklin wanting to run the score up a little bit and make a statement early on, especially with Penn State still existing, even with winning the conference last year in that sort of Michigan, Ohio State, and oh yeah, Penn State zone. Doesn't it still feel a little bit like that?
Yeah, a little bit.
I think an early statement against Pitt coming after last year's loss, close loss, I'm going to give the points here. I think Penn State is good enough to win this game like 45-21.
I'm not confident Pitt can hold Penn State under 30, but I'm also not confident that their offense can score more than 30. And I think that's my cute way of saying that I don't think they're good enough to win this game. I do think they might be good enough for a backdoor cover. And I am going to take Pitt. I'm going to take the points. Pitt has some players on offense.
They definitely do.
They've got the rare double quadri backfield of Quadri Allison and Quadri Henderson.
I think one's a Quadri and one a Quadri?
I'm just going to go double Quadri.
Okay, that's fine.
They've got Jester Wiye, a big, strong wide receiver. Their line's okay. This isn't a team that's going to be uncompetitive. They just need to control the clock if they want to hang with Penn State. They got to find a way to keep the chains moving. I think to some degree, they will do that. I think Pat Narduzzi is smart enough to know that he can't score with Penn State. And so I don't think the question is more, is Penn State going to lose? It's going to be, will they get enough time to get enough separation to cover this point spread?
Ty, if this is a major rivalry in the state of Pennsylvania, what do you got to do? What do you have to do?
I don't know if we do it here.
Honestly. Ty, what do you have to do?
I'm not playing the sound. I don't think you throw the records out.
You gotta throw those records out. Get rid of this 1-0. Get rid of that 1-0. And let's get after it, Ty.
I don't know. My gut is that Penn State wins. They try to run it up, but Pitt's going to eat the clock. They're going to limit possessions. 35-17 is the final score.
Bear cover. Okay. We disagree.
I'm going to go Pitt plus the points here, but Penn State wins handily. Another 3:30 game. TCU, a 3-point favorite on the road at Arkansas. Game is on CBS. I put this game on the list because I have no idea what to expect here.
Entertainment.
It is entertainment. I don't know if Vegas has any clue what's going to happen here. I saw TCU minus one, then Arkansas minus 1.5. Now it's at TCU minus 3. It could be Arkansas minus 15. I haven't checked in 24 hours. I don't know how you feel about this one, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
This was an emotional journey for me trying to figure out who I'm picking.
I like that.
I'm serious now. I'm not kidding. I honest to goodness feel like I'm in a bad relationship with TCU after last year.
Okay.
Arkansas
won last year.
Arkansas won last year, but TCU just damaged me because I picked them as a playoff team. Obviously, they fell woefully short of that. And now, whatever our relationship is, we're not even labeling it on Facebook. We're just leaving the box blank.
Mm-hmm.
I think TCU should be the better team.
But
they scorned me. And do I really want to pick them in a game like this that I think is going to be back and forth? And like I said earlier, come down to the fourth quarter. Arkansas's got the better quarterback. Last week, it looked like they might have a running attack again, albeit against not the greatest competition. So I am torn, and I'm going to require some assistance to actually go with a final selection.
So if we're under the impression that Arkansas's defense has to be better than what they were last year, if they are just striving for bad, because last year they were in the, oh God, why mode. Right. Oh God, why?
Exactly.
I think I'm going to take the home dog tie because it mostly gives us an excuse to play a sound I really like.
Do you want to make the, because I have another one that I'm going to go with later on.
Give me the Hogs tie because they're also associated with a really good sound.
Okay, this is true.
The Yakos. Home dog of the week.
Home dog of the week, Arkansas, plus 3 at home, huh?
I think you can rattle Kenny Hill a little bit.
A little bit?
I think you can rattle
him. You can sneeze and rattle Kenny Hill.
We don't fully know what this defense is going to look like under Paul Rhodes, other than it's still a safe assumption that it'll be better. I think both teams score points. I'm going to go with the home dog here. I think you're going to get a game in the 30s or 40s. TCU, I think, will also be improved from where they were last year because the Horned Frogs are also one of those teams where as soon as you start believing in them is when they sort of let you down, but then they come back every other year and look really impressive for a good chunk of the year. As you remember last year, they looked good early on. So I think we have a sort of shootout-y place, so I'm going to take the points, especially if it's a home team. And this game also makes me a little bit sad because it's a CBS game without Vern going, wow!
Yeah.
Wow! So I'm going to go the Hogs. I'm going to go. I think they're able to move the ball enough against TCU that they'll pull out some weirdness at the end.
I'm breaking up with TCU this week, Dan. I'm doing
it. Okay.
I put it off for far too long. I'm going to go Arkansas. Maybe fatherhood for Brett Bielema will teach him some new tricks here in a big game.
Were you a good break-upper, Ty?
No.
I am and was. I'm very much looking forward to never breaking up with anybody ever again. Now that I'm happily wed, I was very bad at it.
No, I'm not good.
Very bad.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
Okay.
So here we are. So we agree.
We do agree. Thank you for talking me into it, Dan.
No problem.
I do have a question. What's it like to get a custom fitted dress shirt?
Just
wondering. Like if you go out. If you go to the tailor and say, I would give me your finest shirt, sir. Is that an easy experience for you?
Not at all. Because they're not necessarily self-conscious, but they're like, are shirts made for my weird body? Is this really what, you know, all of these companies, and they're great companies out there, but did they have my strange torso in mind when they were producing this textile?
Sir, do you have a shirt for a rhombus?
Yeah, exactly.
Usually the answer is no. That's why you go online. All the kids are going online now to do the cool things. You got to go to propercloth.com where you can easily create a custom shirt size in seconds. All you got to do is answer 10 easy questions, Dan. You can choose from over 20 collar styles, 10 cuff styles, 500 fabric styles, from classic to business. Completely customize your shirt. Get the exact style that you desire. There is a team at Proper Cloth. They work to get you the best fabric from around the world. They only buy fabrics that meet their high quality standards. Everything they do, everything, goes through extensive quality control testing. So you get the absolute best quality craftsmanship. And they guarantee a perfect fit.
I love that.
Guarantee it. If you somehow get a shirt that doesn't fit, they will remake it for free, Dan. Again, completely custom for you. It all just starts at 80 bones. So listen, all you got to do, go to propercloth.com/solid. If you want to stop wearing a shirt that doesn't fit, if you want to start looking your best with a custom fitted shirt, propercloth.com/solid today. Your gift code is solid, S-O-L-I-D. You will save $20 on your very first shirt. Propercloth.com/solid.
Let me tell you something, Ty. At the magnificent live show that we did, we met all sorts of great listeners. I didn't look out into that crowd and think to myself, I'll bet everybody here just looks great off the rack.
Yeah, right.
Sometimes you gotta put in some more work.
4:30 on Fox.
Here we go.
Oregon, a 14-point home favorite over the Nebraska Cornhuskers. You know, for as encouraging as it was that Nebraska held Arkansas State to 500 yards last week.
Yeah.
I'm thinking Oregon might be able to move the ball on Saturday.
I think that's a fair assessment, Ty. And it might even be, I'm looking at the latest line. You have it at how many points?
I had it at 14. Is it more?
No, I'm seeing about 13 and a half, 14.
Let's go 14.
Your original document said about 10.
Yeah, okay.
So it's gone up from where it opened. So
I've updated that, haven't I?
Oh, see, I copy-paste to a text document so I can play with it offline, Ty.
Oh, right, okay. Well, yeah. I've got it at 14 now. Let's agree on 14.
Yeah. So it's a couple touchdowns.
Two touchdowns. Feels like there is some shootout potential here.
Oh, yeah.
Fair to say?
Absolutely fair to say. After what Oregon was able to do, again, I mean, you can't take much away from it, other than the fact that Oregon looked energetic. They looked a little bit reinvigorated under Willie Taggart, and Nebraska, for all of its defensive woes, I would say, under the new look UConn defense that they're running under Bob Diaco.
Right.
I think Oregon should be able to move the ball both on the ground and through the air, especially on the ground, I think, with the options that they have. And on a similar point, I think Nebraska will do very well through the air and probably on the ground, too, with Trey Watson. I like him a lot. But against, especially in the middle of the field, Oregon's a little banged up at safety. Oregon's linebackers outside of Troy Dye are not great. I think they'll be able to pick on Oregon. You know, the god, Tanner Lee, should put up some production. And I could not imagine Nebraska scoring fewer than 28 points.
Fewer than 28 points.
I could not envision a scenario in which Nebraska is scoring fewer than 28 points. That said, I have very specific rules about what I do in shootouts. I think this game has shootout potential. I really hope everybody is breathing okay, because Oregon has been on fire and smoky, and Oregon had to move practice to the coast. So hopefully everything is cleaned up, and in a shootout, everybody is breathing well. I'm going to say Oregon ultimately wins this game 42 to 31.
So yes. that would be
an 11 point win. Nebraska, I take the points. The Huskers cover.
Wow.
Yeah. But Oregon wins.
Well, I got to be honest here for a second.
Please.
I've been thinking a lot lately about how evil it was of me to select Tom Rinaldi tearjerkers in our Fantasy Things draft.
Yeah.
I kind of like it. I kind of like going to the dark side. I mentioned this a little bit to the Solid Wife.
Mm-hmm.
And she brought up a very real point that the next step for my transition to the dark side would be for me to murder my family.
Wow, just from Tom Rinaldi, because you would be, in fact, becoming a Tom Rinaldi tearjerker.
Perhaps, but this is like when Anakin went to the dark side here. So I'd have to murder my family in order to...
Are there no steps before that?
I don't think
so. Like tax fraud?
Maybe. It feels like murdering my family would be the next step. But listen,
there's gotta be something in between.
In a college football sense, Dan.
Mm-hmm.
That means that if I really wanna do the deed, I need to fight fire with fire and start locking up Oregon. If you want to play, listen here.
I'm ready.
This is a tougher tie in 2017.
Okay, not backing down.
If you want to play that damn grandpa music when we talk about Notre Dame, I am going to use my special powers, my reverse jinx powers.
Okay.
And I am going to use those against Oregon until they get relegated into the damn Mountain West.
Here's the problem with that, Ty. You don't know how your season's going to go picking, right? Last year, you recognized that you weren't picking well. So you said, I'm going to go against my gut. And you made that pivot. You made that adjustment. What if you're about to have an altar of Ty year, Ty? And this is what like really pushes you into the altar zone.
I don't know.
You don't know.
I had never considered that.
You might be starting on a miracle run. This might be your DiMaggio season. I reference that because Notre Dame fans remember Joe DiMaggio and what he was able to do.
Right.
Yeah.
I'm thinking that this is the new path for me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm locking up Oregon. May it bring you the same misfortune that it has brought me.
My team
others.
Already went 4-8 as well.
Nope.
Okay.
Your time That's has fine. Come.
I'm steering into it. I'm altar of Ty season. Here we come.
We need to start playing the Rhesus sound for Tanner Lee, by the way. I'll find it. I'll dig that one up.
Please.
So I'm locking up Oregon. What the hell?
Do it.
Let's go to Saturday night. So again, you get through a couple of late afternoon games. Maybe your team plays earlier in the day. And you get to the 7:00 Eastern hour. And the best way I could think of this when I was going through my preview was like, I mean, we both have souped up vehicles at this point, right? Like when you flip up the little thing, the little cover, and then you hit the NAS switch and your head kind of jolts back. That's what happens at the 7:00 Eastern hour, Dan.
Yes. This is a very good coffee nap week.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Definitely.
Like 3:00, take the coffee nap. You're up for 3:30 and you're shot through the night. It's great.
7:00 ESPN. Mm-hmm. Clemson is a 5.5-point favorite at home against Auburn. Initially, I saw this one open at Clemson -6.5, and then the line moved down, which for those of you non-bettors out there means that people were betting on Auburn. There's a little bit of steam coming in on the Auburn Tigers. I said it before. I stand by it. I may be more excited about this game than any other game in the early part of the college football season because it's a good matchup of defenses. We've got unknown quantities on offense. Both teams looked very good last week. And it feels to me on the surface like a very even matchup.
This is going to be the first. Has there been a game yet, a night game, where the announcers have really had that big game on campus feel where like, this stadium is rocking?
No.
Stadium is electric.
It's been all neutral site games.
Right. So this is really our first game because I don't feel like the Coliseum is going to be that way. Notre Dame doesn't rock. It just sort of politely sways.
It sways, yeah. That's accurate.
I think the horseshoe it'll be pretty electric as well Saturday night. But no, this will be our first real like, wow, we are into the season. We are into a big game on campus on the season. And that gives Clemson a huge advantage to me. Unfortunately, Deshaun Watson's not there anymore.
Yeah.
And there's going to be a different dynamic on both sides of the ball because of it. But I don't see a way that Clemson, so if the spread is what, 5.5?
5.5, I've got it at, yeah.
They won this game by 4-6 points last year, something like 20-14, 20-16, 18-14.
Yeah.
Right. When it was at Auburn. So you're talking about a pretty big swing for Auburn to come out and win this game. I think Auburn keeps it close enough. I think Clemson wins it late. They have experience on special teams for perhaps a big kick at the end. I think I am leaning in the 24-21 Clemson. It's not a full coming out party for Kelly Bryant, but I want to say there's at least one huge turnover that Clemson forces that ultimately decides this game. So I'm rolling with the Clemson Tigers in the Tiger battle.
I looked at this one very closely because I have a tendency, a very bad tendency, to underestimate Clemson in all these games. For whatever reason, mm-hmm. when Deshaun Watson was there, maybe the best quarterback in school history, right? Incredible.
Yeah.
An incredible college football superstar. And for whatever reason, Clemson was a blind spot for me. And I tried not to do it in this game because it's big. And even though Clemson will be, in all likelihood, led by their defense this season, mm-hmm. I don't want that to shade how I feel about this team and what they can do on offense. And so because of that, last week for me was a bit eye-opening to see what they did to Kent, because Kelly Bryant, man, he can get it done. 7 rushes, 77 yards, and a touchdown on the ground a week ago, in addition to what he was able to do through the air. I think he puts pressure on Auburn's defensive ends, mm-hmm. on their linebackers, where there may be a few questions out there. I think this line's right on the number.
Okay.
I think Clemson wins 30-24. And I think they cover the point spread at
That's home. Pretty high scoring considering these defenses.
Yeah.
So here's the danger for me. Jarrett Stidham is a more known quantity just as an individual talent than Kelly Bryant. And that's fair, yes?
Mm-hmm.
He started games against Power 5 teams. So we could be dealing with a situation where we are overreacting a little bit to Kelly Bryant looking comfortable against Kent State. Kent tackle, Kent score, Kent State. I'm a little bit worried about that overreaction factor to us just after last week saying, well, Kelly Bryant is good enough to keep train going, when we definitely don't know. There was nothing between Kent State and Auburn for us to get a more accurate read. And that worries me a little bit in feeling confident, because he could throw 3 disaster picks, Ty. That's entirely on the table against a defense as good as Auburn, right?
That's on the table, and
but I don't feel that way about Jarrett Stidham against the Clemson defense.
Yeah, I don't feel that way either, because he's also got a running game that's a lot more proven.
Yeah,
and I don't know how confident I feel that Auburn is going to be able to move the ball on the ground against a very, very good Clemson defense. But that running game is about the most proven quantity of anything we have on either offense.
Mm-hmm.
So that, to me, gave me a cause for pause.
Cause for pause.
But I'm going to go Clemson, 30-24.
Okay. Cool. We disagree.
Another nighttime game. So maybe load this one up on the iPad or the iPhone.
Yeah.
Or do Zunes play video? Maybe on the Zune. Find something else that you can load this game on.
Projectors, digital projectors are surprisingly inexpensive nowadays.
A digital projector? Yeah.
You got a big white wall? Yeah.
7:30 on ABC. In the Horseshoe, Ohio State, a 7.5-point favorite over the Oklahoma Sooners. You'll remember this game from a year ago. A big early season matchup a year ago. Ohio State rolled one up on Norman, 45-24-ish was the final.
Yeah, I'll accept that.
Now you got Oklahoma making the return trip, and 7.5 feels like a lot.
Why?
I think Oklahoma can throw on Ohio State, because Ohio State loses Malik Cooker, Marshawn Lattimore, Gary Conley.
Gary Conley, yeah.
From a year ago. So that matchup, Baker Mayfield against the Ohio State secondary, to me, is going to be a fun little matchup to watch. And if Baker gets it going like he did a week ago, different circumstance, mind you, but if he gets it going like he did a week ago,
go Miners,
then I could see them putting up some points, hanging within a touchdown, maybe winning the game outright.
I think this is another perhaps slight overreaction to Ohio State struggling against Indiana in the way that they did early on. Remember what happened when Ohio State sort of clicked. They just went nuts and put on a ton of points and prevented Indiana from doing anything, and they adjusted. So with a week to adjust to, oh, let's not put our corners who haven't really played on an island to fades constantly, I think Ohio State's going to be all right. I think a lot of what Oklahoma does depends on balance, which is incredibly impressive and admirable. But Samaje Perine and Joe Mixon are gone. It's a fully new receiving core. I know there's rotation guys that are filling in, and they have a big transfer from Kentucky. It's Jeff Badette. I don't know. I will eventually learn how to pronounce every name I can. But last year, what happened in this game specifically? It was JT Barrett threw all over Oklahoma's defense. JT Barrett doesn't throw all over anybody.
Yeah, right.
But he threw all over Oklahoma's defense. They're switching to a 4-man front, which is going to change things up a little bit. Ohio State now has a brand new shiny running back in J.K. Dobbins, who looks excellent. They return everybody on their own defensive line, who will limit Baker Mayfield's time and just in general what Oklahoma is going to try and do. It's at Ohio State. JT Barrett threw all over them in Oklahoma. I'm thinking Ohio State, after a stale start against Indiana, has found itself a little bit. They've looked in the mirror and said, okay, this is who we are. This is what we do well. This is what we can exploit against a team. Now, Oklahoma's down a rotation corner, which is kind of necessary against Ohio State. I'm going to go Ohio State to win relatively comfortably once again, 38-27.
Okay.
They win by 11 in cover. And I don't even think it's going to be, I think that's sort of a, it'll be 38-20 with 3 minutes left and they get to 27.
We are kindred spirits, Dan.
Is that true?
Very kindred spirits. Ohio State's front seven from a year ago is almost entirely intact. Even if Baker Mayfield gets it going through the air, he is going to be under constant assault from that Ohio State front. And ultimately, I think that front will be the difference here. I really do. I also like the combination of JT Barrett now with J.K. Dobbins and Mike Weber, who is going to play in this game after sitting out a week ago. I like the matchup of Urban Meyer against Lincoln Riley, which people are high on Lincoln Riley, but I like Urban Meyer's chances a little bit more in this game.
Okay.
I also favor Ohio State by 11 points, 35-24.
Okay.
In favor of the Buckeyes here.
We agree.
We do.
Okay.
Moving on.
So do you still feel good about Oklahoma? Do you feel, does this sort of, this results say something larger about these two teams for you?
I think it will say more about Ohio State.
Okay.
And probably to your point that what happened against Indiana, don't overreact to that.
Yeah, I don't know if Paris Campbell's dropping all those easy catches.
Don't overreact to what catches. You saw a week ago from Ohio State. Ohio State's going to be just fine.
Yeah. All right.
Casper is a sleep brand that created a premium mattress and sells it online for a fraction of what it would cost in a store.
This is true.
I saw that you opened yours up.
Ty, breaking news.
We have breaking news. You finally, people have been asking on the Reddit, on Twitter, Facebook. People legitimately want to know if you've opened your Casper mattress and what it's done for your sleeping.
Jody with an eye finally forced my hand and we opened the Casper mattress. And I got to tell you, aside from how comfortable it is, and it is very, very comfortable. I've been sleeping very well on it. It's got the weird vacuum pack.
Oh, man. Quality. It's like magic.
And so it's vacuum packed. And so they can roll it up and send it in a box that's not completely crazy to carry upstairs or whatever, or an elevator if you're so lucky. And once you slice open the vacuum packing, once you unroll the mattress itself, it's not an air mattress, though. It's 100% not an air mattress. It is just vacuum packed. There's so much air sucked out of it that, yeah. And it's very comfortable, Ty. It is very comfortable. I've been sleeping very well.
We spend one third of our lives on a mattress. That's why it's important to sleep on a good one. And that's why it's important to try one out before you fully commit. Thankfully, Casper will give you 100 nights to try it out. If you don't love it, they'll pick it up. They will refund you everything. Right now, you can get $50 towards any mattress purchase by visiting Casper, CASPER.com/verbal. Use the code verbal. Terms and conditions do apply, Dan.
Yeah, and if you don't think Ty and I keep our dumb discussions going after we hit stop, we had a very rousing text message conversation about the pros and cons of various pillows.
Oh my God, yeah.
Ty, I mean, I'm with you with the shredded microfiber. You just have a more customizable pillow than I have.
Mine has a zipper on the side, yeah.
That's unbelievable.
Good highfalutin pillow that lets you take out
pillow hacking.
Shredded. Yeah, that's right. Where were we? Right. Oh, Notre Dame.
Notre Dame, NBC, 7:30 p.m.
Notre Dame, a 4.5-point favorite over the Georgia Bulldogs. I mentioned at the top that Jacob Eason has been ruled out due to a knee sprain. Jake Fromm will take his place. Could he be Jake's superior? We'll have to find out. He played a little bit last week. Again, I liked what I saw. I think it would be a very bad move to underestimate Georgia because of a true freshman playing. Initially, when the line came out, it was about 6.5. And I saw that and I said, that's a little bit more confidence in Notre Dame than I have.
Mm-hmm.
And then I saw the line start to move down. And just as a college football fan, as someone who follows Georgia as closely as we do here, just in doing the show, that was my cue. Like, okay, other people saw what I saw when they saw Jake Fromm out there. He's actually pretty good.
Right.
I think two things will decide this football game. And I think you can ask the exact same questions to both teams. Question one, can Notre Dame stop the other's rushing attack? Important first question.
Mm-hmm.
Two, can Georgia/Notre Dame force Brandon Wimbush / Jake Fromm into making some mistakes? Because both looked pretty good last week. I can obviously talk more to Wimbush, and I think he needs to hone his accuracy. He missed some open guys and all that, but I like their receivers a lot. Which team can force the other young quarterback into making a mistake? That's going to be a pretty big deal. Otherwise, a pretty evenly matched game. I don't think either team's going to blow the other out. I can make a really good case for either team to win this football game. So I'm kind of on the fence about who I actually think wins, but I think somebody wins by a 31-28 score, and never would I ever consider laying the points in a game like this.
Fair enough. A little curious, and we were talking about this earlier, that Notre Dame, and it was a Brandon Wimbush factor of not fully being accurate with open guys, but Notre Dame was not able to complete really all that much in the way of passes downfield. You are going to have to be able to stretch this Georgia defense to succeed on any sort of important level. But on that same token, Notre Dame ran the hell out of the ball against Temple. Not a nobody, like a number of teams played last week. So that was quite impressive with Notre Dame's offensive line, like you mentioned. It could also be a situation where in the middle of the second quarter, we all collectively say, oh, right, Jake Fromm is a true freshman playing on the road and against South Bend in his first game starting for the Bulldogs. Sure. And yeah, it's acceptable that he's sort of screwing up and Notre Dame takes advantage and wins. I think I'm going to go Georgia here, at least to cover, partially because of the unknown factor of Notre Dame's offense against a really good defense, and also Notre Dame's defense. You know, the Georgia offensive line has been pretty disappointing, but if they're able to get anything going on the ground with Nick Chubb and Sony Michel, then Jake Fromm has things open up for him a little bit. And I'm just going with the unexpected of Notre Dame and not fully trusting Brandon Wimbush yet against a really, really good defense. So I'm going to go Georgia. I think Notre Dame, it's similar to Auburn. I think Notre Dame wins this game close, but Georgia keeps it low scoring. It's going to be like a 17-14 Notre Dame win. Oh, and my final thing is, sorry about this, Ty. Grandpa, no, there's not a real cloud.
That
your files are, it's not an actual cloud. It's a server thing, and it's just a term cloud. I don't know what they call it that.
Okay,
but it's just sort of the idea.
I can
that
mute your mic. You know,
it'll have your files. Yes, yes.
Georgia wins 31-28.
I apologize. My grandfather had some issues. Georgia, he's a huge wins. Notre Dame guy.
31-28. I'm picking Georgia.
Okay.
Finally, on Fox at 8:30. USC at home, a 7-point favorite, Dan, against the Stanford Cardinal. You were just talking about how it's important not to overreact to week one. And if we've learned anything on this show in now our 10th season of podcasting, it's that you shouldn't overreact to week one. You see a ton of improvement between week one and week two.
Right.
But that's hard.
Do it, Ty.
That's so hard to do. USC, God, I'm going to play it again. This was their defensive line. Last week against Western Michigan, they knew it was coming, Dan. Western threw for 94 yards. 27 of them came on a trick play.
Mm-hmm.
There were no smoke and mirrors here. Everyone in the stadium, everyone watching at home, knew that Western couldn't throw and they were going to run the ball, and they still ran all over USC. So what's going to happen now when you've got a better team with a better running game, a better line, a better quarterback, a better defense, a much, much better coach? Do you think that's going to be any easier against the Stanford Cardinal?
No, but USC is really good. So this USC team, who returns a lot, they went to Washington and really outclassed the Huskies. Washington last year. And listen, I know the whatever property is, the what is it, Ty? What property are we talking about? The Tran something?
Oh, yeah, right.
Yeah.
That thing.
We're so old and the worst. I know that they took it to Stanford last year. I don't know where to go in this game, Ty, because I really want to believe in going against the overreaction and USC playing really well. Stanford is built to play really well against USC. I think they'll be able to run against the Trojans a good amount. I think USC's play calling will improve because Ronald Jones is ridiculous. And Ty, please play the dude alert sound for Ronald Jones. Please. Whoa, 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 it's a dude alert. Thank you, because he is ridiculous. And if they keep feeding him, everything is going to open up for the offense and for Sam Darnold. I can't do it. I'm going to take the points. You're going to offer me Stanford plus 7 early on, healthy. I'm worried about Keller Christ against a good USC defense, but even still, the Stanford team is good enough to keep it close. That's too many points. I think USC wins this game 28-24, but I will happily take those points. So USC with a big statement win early on in the season ahead of a huge matchup against Texas, Ty. Make no mistake.
Yeah.
But I think Stanford covers the spread.
Yeah, I the beauty of previewing Stanford is that you always know what to expect. They're good at power football. They're good at setting up play action. They're good at playing defense. That's what they do. The big key is to slow down their run enough so that they don't kill you with the clock, because that's their other strength. They eat
transitive clock. Property. Thank yeah. you. Sorry.
They eat the clock. If
yes,
they do that, then they limit your possessions, and then they kind of own you. And I think that's the danger here in a game like this. I was not as high on Stanford preseason as you were, but I was pretty high. And granted, their week one game didn't exactly come against the most optimal competition, but USC was so underwhelming against the run, and it really didn't get much better throughout the course of a game. That to me was a giant red flag. So both teams are obviously good enough to win. This is a 4-point game one way or the other.
Somebody's got to win.
Somebody's got to win. I am going to go Stanford by a 31-27 final here to go to LA and pull the upset. At a minimum, I like Stanford plus the points.
Stanford still yet to win a game in America. Interesting. Interesting. But yeah, I think you're right. I think you're right that it's not USC winning by 10, 13, 17 points. Because I think when teams beat Stanford decisively, it is either because they have some sort of outlandish talent like Marcus Mariota. And even last year, Washington looked so good. Stanford was crazy beat up. But it was in Seattle. It was Thursday. It was just the circumstances were right for beating up on that Stanford team. And Washington was much more so the better team. I don't see that this year. I don't, you know, Sam Darnold might be that eventually, but I don't think USC is at that place yet.
I also have a riddle for you.
I'm ready.
If you could indulge me for a second.
Yeah.
Stanford wins a game in week one, goes on bye for a week, and then plays a game on week two. How is this possible?
It was a long week one. It's a very long
The horse's name is one. Obviously week one, but
the mother is the surgeon, Ty.
I've been working all week on that one, Dan. I'm very proud of it.
I'm going to tell you something, Ty, that is not at all relevant to the Stanford-USC game. I'm in the room I'm not normally in when we record this podcast. I am freezing my ass. It is so cold. I am standing up now so I can like bop up and down and generate some energy. My arms are crossed. Okay. I'm at full torso attention, Ty.
Yeah.
You can deal with that phrase how you'd like.
Sure.
Woo!
All right.
The heat of our picks that was warming me up.
Well, let's get moving. We got a couple other games that we need to discuss here. Saturday at noon on ESPN2, Iowa going to Iowa State. They are a 2.5-point road favorite. What do they call this game, Dan?
Elasico.
I call it
the Yakos home dog of the week.
I am rooting for Iowa State this year, maybe to a fault. I don't think they can stop Akram Wadley at all, but it is a rivalry game. It is home. It means more, I think, for Iowa State than it does for Iowa. I'm going to say they pull the upset at home, 35-28.
Ooh, ha. Now, you know, I'm going to go Iowa. I think Iowa wins this game 28-17. I like where they're at. Yeah.
10-15, and a bit of a nightcap on ESPN, too. BYU at home, a 1-point favorite. What do they call this game?
Holy War!
BYU, Dan, how do you feel about BYU through two games?
Not great.
Nope, not at all.
Great.
I am going to go Utah outright. Do you remember a year ago when I had that weird fascination with teams scoring exactly 19 points?
That was a good time.
Utah wins this game 19-17.
Yeah, I think Utah wins this game 20-13. Even though it's at BYU, I think Utah's the better team. They're a more unknown team because of Troy Taylor and the new look offense. I'm not crazy about Utah quarterback right now and passing the ball down the field. But BYU is still looking for its first points to get against an FBS team.
Yeah.
Not a cool position for the offense right now. So I'm going to roll with Utah.
Also a late game on ESPN, Washington State at home, a 10-point favorite against Boise State. Dan, any reason here to doubt Wazoo?
I mean, they lost this game last year, so that would be one. And the fact that this game has generally been played pretty tight recently, I believe it went to overtime last year. 9 points is a lot, especially against what is appearing early on to be, at least, and Boise State played a real team in Troy, to be a very good Boise State defense. Boise, excuse me. That's the preferred nomenclature tie. It's not okay. Boise. Boise. I like the Boise defense, so I think they're able to hang with Wazoo enough that they keep it close, but ultimately, let's go 28-27 Wazoo.
And a couple other interesting games here. We've got Lane Kiffin on the road, a 32-point dog against Wisconsin. They're going to get killed, but it'll be interesting to see Lane Kiffin in a big game.
I'm rolling Jonathan Taylor tailback there.
Okay. And we've also got Louisville minus 10 at North Carolina. North Carolina obviously lost a game last week to Cal. Not a great loss, but Louisville struggled somewhat mightily with lowly Purdue. Can they get back on the horse here?
Yeah, I think Louisville takes things out on North Carolina. I don't believe Cal is a very good team, but they might be okay. Louisville has a big, and Lamar Jackson has a big day against North Carolina. They win this game going away by 23 points.
Those are all the games I have, Dan.
That's everything?
That's all.
You don't want to talk about Delaware football?
Nope.
Against Va Tech?
Nope.
Oh, excuse me, Virginia Tech is the preferred. Miami Arkansas State was canceled because of Hurricane Irma. I know the Florida and Florida State games against other teams were moved up to noon. UConn's game against somebody, USF, excuse me, was moved up to 10:30 a.m. local time.
Nice.
So there's that factor. Alabama hosts Fresno State and a first-year coach in Jeff Tedford. Other than that, matchup-wise, not a ton. Except, Ty, what should people be doing in the afternoon?
Coffee nap.
And? Making?
No, making verbabies, yeah.
Making solid verbabies. And speaking of which, Ty,
yeah,
please drop that writhing, dripping, flailing, spraying.
Okay.
Drum and fife.
Oh, yeah.
All right. So Fordham, early hit against the United States Army. They're traveling to CenCon, Central Connecticut. I'm rolling Rams here, Ty. New York's one true team.
New York's one true team times two here. I think they get the monkey off their back, yeah.
Crusaders making noise.
Yeah, man.
Early on in this season against the Bison this week at Bucknell, which Bucknell, not a fan You are not a fan.
Nope.
Are you going with the Crusaders to keep that energy high?
Gotta go Crusaders.
I'm gonna go Bison. I'm gonna go Bison here. That's a hornet's nest of a stadium going to the Buck Dome.
Okay.
The Spiders of Richmond, a perennial FCS power, traveling to Colgate, another team making noise.
Another team in the Pat League.
Who could have seen such a thing? Colgate hosting Richmond, where you stand?
I gotta go Colgate here, although Richmond's typically pretty good at the FCS level. I'm gonna go Colgate here. I'm gonna see them continue riding the wave.
I'm riding the Gators, Ty. I'm feeling something weird. It's all happening. Lafayette Leopards struggle early on hosting Sacred Hearts.
Yeah.
Yeah. Do you have a pick, Ty? Do you have a...
I mean...
Are you going to roll Lafayette? Are you going to roll with the pride of Easton, PA? What kind of football team could a school called Sacred Heart have?
I'm going to go Sacred Heart, Dan.
How?
I'm going to go Sacred Heart. I'm going to stick it to you and your family members now, too, because I'm evil.
Altar of Ty, Georgetown, home, former home of... Multi-sport fields?
I think it's still labeled as multi-sport field.
It has
if you go
to
on ESPN.
Be.
Yeah.
How, that's like changing the name of Fenway.
A classic,
or Wrigley.
A classic never dies.
You don't just waltz into the multi-tie. I'm going multi-Hildenbrandt. Georgetown and taking that multi-sport field energy to Campbell?
Campbell.
Is that correct?
I believe Campbell is correct here. I looked
it
up.
Taking it to soup.
Yeah, it's the team, not the soup, but I'm going to go Georgetown on the road. And lest you forget, Lehigh on the road at Monmouth.
That's true. I've been to Monmouth.
Yeah?
There's a horse track there. My uncle almost made a whole bunch of money, but I'm going to roll with Kate here. I'm going to go with Solid Wife Kate and the Lehigh, the engineers here. So, yeah, Lehigh big against Monmouth. Lehigh big.
I'm going to go Lehigh as well, Dan.
Yeah, all right.
Let's go Lehigh as well.
We've got a smart person matchup in Northwestern Duke. Any thoughts there?
Northwestern.
All right. I'm going to go with Northwestern as well.
Yeah.
Outside of that, Ty, there's not... we got Western Michigan against Michigan State.
Okay.
That's it's a 3:30 kick. It could be like 7. We're like, well, it's in triple overtime. Let's see what's happening kind of game.
Yeah.
Okay. Texas San Jose State. I'm going to be in Austin this weekend, Ty.
That's right. That's right.
I am going to be in Austin. So if you see me in Austin...
I presume you're doing some kind of autograph signing session down there, yes?
No, I am not.
Good.
I'm going to the bachelor party. I'm going to Camera Guy Dave's bachelor party.
Well, congratulations,
and we will be able to watch games. Yeah. Hawaii, UCLA. Letdown spot. Come on, Ty. Nick Rolovich has the rainbow... Excuse me. The Warriors.
That's right.
Rolling.
We're
talking 2-0 Hawaii, traveling to Pasadena.
This is a longer than usual in-season show. Usually we try to cap it at around 45 minutes.
Yeah.
So I was thinking maybe.
Oh, yeah? You got a suggestion?
I think maybe a secret verbal is in order here.
Okay.
And I've been stewing on this one. I actually think I have a pretty good target for it.
I think you have a great point here.
Peter Burns is a longtime friend of the pod. I was on Peter Burns' radio show way back in the day for an interview. I think you were too.
Mm-hmm. Sounds right.
Peter Burns is now with the SEC Network. He's also, I believe, from some of the scorecards he's posted on Instagram, a bit of a scratch golfer.
Mm-hmm. He looks about 6'10", 140.
Yeah.
Real lean guy. Ropes the ball something fierce.
So I'm thinking something golf related, and I know as a golfer, though not nearly as talented as Mr. Burns, that to hear that you've left equipment behind is among the most terrifying things in the world, because obviously this is not cheap equipment. So my initial thought was to tweet Peter Burns and tell him that he left his 4-iron at Piper Glen.
What is Piper Glen?
Piper Glen's a TPC golf course that
sounds
I know
like
he's played
star.
Because I'm a follower.
Okay.
And I saw that recently. But then I started thinking, well, maybe we could really push the envelope here.
Mm-hmm.
Do you have any additional thoughts?
Yeah, I would say my suggestion is let's just get weird with it. I mean, if we're going to accuse Will Leach of eating orca meat.
Right.
I don't know if just having a tweet saying you left your 4-iron behind will do. How about something, how recently was he at? It's Piper Glen. It
Piper
sounds
Glen.
Like a porn star tie.
It really does, yeah. Yeah. Fairly recently.
Let's say just saw a photo of Peter Burns riding on horseback at Piper Glen along the course.
Okay.
And it's the strangest thing I've ever seen. So instead of a cart,
by the seventh hole. It was crazy.
Yeah. Did I just see a picture of Peter Burns riding a horse at Piper Glen?
Yeah.
Ever tell you that I once saw Peter Burns? So tag him on Twitter. Do not tag us no reference to the Solid Verbal. But there is a story about Peter Burns riding a horse at Piper Glen when he played golf there. Ask him for the story.
Yeah.
Allude to it somehow, but without drawing it back to us.
He's
Peter Burns
at
Piper Glen on a horse.
At Peter Burns, PETERBURNS, ESPN on Twitter. At Peter Burns, ESPN. Don't mention us. Talk to him about riding a horse at Piper Glen, maybe by the seventh hole. Maybe ask about the horse, but just get the lowdown on it. Don't tell him he sent you.
When you get a job at ESPN and you have ESPN in your Twitter handle, you have to, by law, in the contract, you're like, oh, my Twitter handle is Peter Burns, ESPN. Did I not? ESPN.
I like Peter.
So you saw Peter Burns on a horse at Piper Glen, or you saw a picture of it, or you heard there is a story, there is lore, Ty.
Yeah, that's right.
About Peter Burns on a horse at Piper Glen.
Peter's a good dude. Yeah. So we'll have fun with this one. Okay.
Yeah.
Well, long show, lengthy show.
For only like five good games.
There's only a handful of games.
Yeah.
Please do tweet in your pictures of your setup. We will use those for our newsletter next week. I'm going to write up a little something about the Fantastic Four matchups here at 7 p.m. and later on the East Coast this Saturday night. So send us a picture of your setup. Perhaps we'll use some of those photos in next week's newsletter. You can subscribe if you go on out to solidverbal.com, look for the newsletter link. Don't forget to get your pick'em selections in if you haven't already, if you had a chance to get in on the pool. And by all means, give us a call, 408-VERBAL-1. As all the action is taking place over the span of week two, we'd love to hear from you. 408-VERBAL-1. We'll mix those up and put together our reverbs on Sunday morning.
I have some people to thank real quick.
Please.
Who are just particularly excellent. Ben Brown Blum, which is very difficult to say. Our old pal Shane Stambaugh, very supportive. Billy French, a.k.a. The Thinking Man. Gary Holtzclaw. Gina Trent, she's got two names in one. We've got Jay Newcastle, long time, full time. And Ty, you. Thank you for being you. Ty Hildenbrandt.
Thank you, Dan. For that guy over there, Dan Rubenstein. For myself, Ty Hildenbrandt. Thanks again for tuning into The Solid Verbal. We will catch you all on Sunday. In the meantime, stay solid.
Peace.